Pickaxe.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
Welcome to Triforce episode 15?
It could be. Yeah, it is. It is.
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
welcome.
You're right.
Welcome, friends.
Good one.
Welcome back.
Hey, welcome to Triforce episode 15, he says with assured confidence.
Yeah, yeah. So
if
you're a regular listener, of course, episode 14, which went out last week now, was the infamous one where all of us were very knowledgeable about Brexit and Bremain. But we're not going to talk about that this week.
Yep.
We just had a discussion before we started and we said, you know what? I think we're too advanced in what we know about it. And the average Joe just doesn't understand, like, they're not on our level sort of thing.
I mean, like Michael Gove said, the British people are sick of hearing from experts. So we're experts.
Yeah.
We're going to shut up about it. We're not going to talk about it.
Yeah, we're going to talk about other stuff.
It does feel like a big part of the news, but I'm glad we're avoiding it. By the way, about episode numbers... Someone did actually donate when I was streaming and asked me not to call one of the episodes 13.
Yeah.
They get triggered. They're afraid of the number 13.
And I sort
of
said,
sure. Is that what it's called? Triskaidekaphobia.
Yeah.
And I forgot and just did it anyway.
Yeah.
So I maybe, sorry to that guy or girl, probably guy. Let's be real. So
what does that mean? Though, what does that mean? Can we just backtrack a bit? What do you mean by that?
I think if we do a quick straw poll of our audience, I think a lot of them are gentlemen.
Well, see, this is where I disagree. I think our demographic is definitely 18 to 21 year old blonde, size 8 women.
Size 8? That sounds tiny.
Yeah.
It is.
I don't want this. No skinny bitches.
No. Well, I mean, they're like. Yeah,
we want like Pammies. We want like 35.
We want size 8.5
year old.
Yeah, yeah.
Baywatch expert.
I mean,
she's not 35.
I'm not being
45.
Funny. I'm 40 now, right?
So 45 to 55.
When I see girls that are like hot 18 year olds, I'm thinking they're too young. They're too young. I mean, I'm an old man now. It's morally questionable. If I would have
I'm
anything
the total
to
opposite.
Add to their
I mean,
life.
I'm almost as old as you and I don't think that at all. I'm like, hey, baby, what's up? I mean, in my mind, I say that, obviously, in my mind. I mean, I would never articulate that outwards because, you know, I'm a horrible recluse and, you know, I feel uncomfortable around other human beings. But in my mind, I'm like fucking Casanova. Like, I'm, you know.
Of course.
You know, I'm hitting it.
I mean, what I'm saying is, I'm not one of those. I'm not into grannies. You know what I mean? I'm not into grannies.
No.
But I'm saying, like,
no.
I think if you can't appreciate a woman in her 30s or 40s, I think you're looking at them the whole wrong way. And I think beauty is not just about being a hot 18-year-old nymphomaniac. You know, I'm saying that there are other flavors to the lady spectrum.
It's not all about that, but in some ways it is kind of about that at the same time. Because
sexuality
you know.
Is very fluid.
Yes.
You know? You can be attracted to all sorts of things.
It is if I'm feeling
ponies,
very fluid.
Animes.
Sounds a little...
I mean, at the very end of that spectrum, there's the guys that are attracted to feeding their loved ones, you know, like 20 Happy Meals from McDonald's
Chubby
every
chases.
Day.
Yeah, the
and
feeders
keeping,
and...
Keeping them big, yeah.
Yeah, that's not cool. That's not cool.
Sanding down like their like leathery, chafed skin fragments and stuff. Like,
It's like you know the way women that when they make foie gras, they force feed those, those ducks
please
or
stop.
Whatever. I'm wondering if they're force feeding the ladies to make them the sexual equivalent of foie gras.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, no, because they sit around, Lewis. They can't. They're not mobile, right? Because they're fed so much, so their skin chafes big time and gets like all like hard and leathery in spots. And it's really important to like with a like a huge nail file, you have to like sand
it
down a bit.
I really need to just stop you.
Keep on top.
Still going down this path. It's cool. Whatever you're into.
Yeah.
Keep it to yourself.
You know what? That is, it's so funny. That's like the typical response that people have when they talk about other people's sex lives is they're like, whatever you do in the privacy of your bedroom, don't care about it, but just keep it to yourself. It's like, I don't want to hear or see your alternative lifestyle. Just keep it locked
again,
behind closed doors.
Should.
Underground. Go live underground like a mole. And just live there and do what you like.
No,
and that's fine
and then
by
feed
me.
Your girlfriend and have sex with her like a mole or whatever and just shut up. Don't want to hear it. I don't want to see it or hear it.
Just
I think you're
build
completely
a concrete
wrong.
Bunker and live in there and that's fine by me. Well, how fucking generous. Thank you. I can live in a hole now.
Fine
and do
in
what
that
I like.
Case. Let's have a fucking week where we celebrate it. Let's have Chubby Chase Week, right?
It's like, oh,
it
you
can
can't
be after
see
Gay
that.
Pride Month, right?
It's not
and
Chubby
it could
Chase.
Be like
it's a feeder.
Week.
It's a feeder.
Well, like, they've got to call it nice, something
we'll
nice.
We'll have feeder week.
Right?
Oh
they're not
God.
Cool with that. We'll have furries week and then.
No,
there already
Bernie's
is
week.
One.
No.
It's not official, but
we'll
there
have
is
a week
one.
For everyone, okay?
All and right.
Then that way there'll be. Well, because look, you have to, like, you know, say that you're cool with, like, these minorities, even if you're not. What a weird thing to say! It's. If you
dig that hole any further, Lewis, you're gonna bump into some people you've buried
on
the ground.
You're gonna bump into a weird mole man feeding his wife KFC and having sex with her.
What did you say? Where am I gonna dig through to? The fucking mole man place.
Yeah. A bunch of mole men in a bunker. Jesus
you
Christ.
You told us to keep it to the bedroom.
Oh, there I was, feeding my wife KFC, and in popped some guy's head. We weren't expecting to see anyone down here in the bunker. But
some skinny asshole.
Careful. We should have Skinny Appreciation Week as well.
Oh, God. We should have Asshole Appreciation Week as well.
Exactly.
We don't big them up. Nearly enough.
Do you,
you
mean
know?
People who are assholes or actual physical assholes? The anatomical.
I think week
asshole.
One can be for the people, and then week two can be for literally assholes, whether they're bleached or like they're just au naturel or whatever. You know, let's celebrate those things. They work hard. Man,
do you know,
they
do
work
you know what?
Hard.
I'd like to raise this drink to functioning assholes everywhere.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Oh. If you're in possession of a functioning asshole, I appreciate mine on a daily basis when I think I need a poop, but I'm not going to panic because I know that my bunghole has this covered. No problem.
Yeah.
I'm going to get to the toilet and then he's like, cool, we can do this now. That's good. That's good. Yeah. It's an amazing piece of evolution. Imagine where we'd be.
It really is.
Imagine where we'd be if we had to shit where we stood constantly, like horses and cows. You'd never get anything done.
Oh, man, that'd be so awkward.
Sex
eh?
Would
horses
be terrible.
Are the worst, too. Horses just shit anywhere. They just stand there, and it just comes out. Like, it's so weird. Like, why do if they do that?
Well, I think that if we met, like, an alien race, okay, there's a good chance they're not just going to be, you know, the Star Trek between 5'8", 6'2", nice teeth, you know, American accent. That's
with
pretty
like
unlikely.
With some purple paint on their face.
Yeah,
and a couple of bumps.
Like super glued to the forehead.
Yes.
It's going to be like a horse monster that poops everywhere. And it's going to just walk around the ship. There's going to be poop everywhere. We're like, oh my God, what the hell is this? And they're like, yeah, we don't have an asshole. We just poop all over the fucking place.
Greetings, human.
Like, how did you get off of the planet? Well, you know, we enslaved this minor race who go around cleaning up all the poop and they use it for energy.
I hope they bring back Star Trek and you can write for it, Lewis. That's like some Gene Roddenberry level stuff right there.
pooping horse monsters.
We are the pooping horse people of Horse Poop 14.
It's like some Futurama level garbage.
Kirk DeBridge, we have found the pooping horse monsters. Please send help.
prepare an away party. All right, hands up who wants to go on the away party to the planet of shitting horsemen. Anyone? Yeah. Spock?
No. Nope. Spock would be all up for that.
Yeah, he'd be like, it is merely,
Captain, this is illogical. I must see these creatures shitting in their natural habitat.
Captain, that's my fetish. We better have gay horse asshole appreciation week next time. Because when I come back...
Is this Spock? Yeah. Is that Spock talking?
It's me doing Sips' Spock.
Which is like a mix of Data from time to time, and then it sort of transitions back to Spock. But yeah, it's just that sort of robotic, like, you know, they make decisions based on really dumb things.
Star Trek, whether it's Vulcan or a robot or Borg or whatever. They get,
They're not emotional. The key trait is they have no capacity for emotion, so everything is very logical.
It's really easy to act because they have this permanent sort of straight, sort of slightly confused or angry look on their face.
Do you know
depending on which they are.
When you really look at those characters, everybody loves Spock, right? And Data, and they were like two popular characters in the show. But I look at them and, I mean, I get why they put them in there, but all they use them for 99% of the time is explaining complicated shit to the viewers by explaining it to the idiot humans that happen to be in charge of the ship. That's literally their job. Is their captain's like, full speed ahead. And Mr. Data would be like, wait a second, Captain, because here's a very reasonable scientific reason why we shouldn't do that. Oh, yeah. Data's got it. Yep. Thanks for the advice. Yeah. All right. Full speed, not half speed ahead. He's like, looks at Data for approval. Data like winks, gives him a little thumbs up. He's like, sweet. He's like, what? Just fucking put the robots in charge. For Christ's sake. Data, never fucks up.
But occasionally they got to take one for the team as well. They got to go on those tricky away missions by themselves where they're very emotionally charged. Like for instance, if they came across a race of aliens who really took a lot of delight in slaying unicorns, for example... Picard would not be the best man for that job, right? He'd get down there and he'd just be like a blubbering mess. He'd be crying because these people would be like, hello, humans, and just like, you know, slitting a unicorn's throat or whatever. But you send Data down there and he would just do that stupid fucking facial expression he does, you know, where his sort of like face goes back a bit. Yeah, and his eyes like open a little bit or whatever.
Yeah.
Peculiar. These people seem to be slaying unicorns. And then he has to like check his receptors or whatever and stuff, but he'd be able to, you know, he'd be able to like put a really good trip report together and present it back to the board and to Picard and stuff in a fashion where Picard wouldn't get too upset
because
he of course loves horses. So, and any sort of creature that's related to a horse.
But the thing is, Data is always going to uphold the fucking first directive, or the prime directive, right? Data's the guy. If you program Data, don't fuck up the prime directive. He's going to be like, cool. And he's going to have the perfect logic, like Spock did. These are the guys. If Starfleet was real, they would never put Kirk in charge of a ship. In a heartbeat, they would say, get Spock. Get Spock. He can do the exploration, because he's the guy who's going to meet them and go, it's not logical. We wouldn't do it. Prime directive, y'all, which makes sense. We got to be chill about this. We can't fuck with the unicorn,
guys. Oh, fuck's sake. I have a real problem with
prime directive.
The Vulcans in Star Trek, okay? It's almost like the holodeck, okay? The holodeck is a liability, you know, waiting to happen. It's gone wrong so many times. So many people have almost died. So many times it's almost like fucking destroy the ship. It's ridiculous, okay? It's super dangerous. And Vulcans are the same. They're like... bullshit. Like, there's always every sort of seventh or eighth episode, there's some medical illness or some bullshit that's going on with someone where they've gone crazy for some reason. And medical science is at a loss. Okay, they're like, their brain chemistry is all scrambled. What are we gonna do? We can't. The neural stimulator's not working. And the Vulcan is like, step aside. How about we try a mind meld? It's like, no, mind melds are universally
now is not
trash.
The time for a mind meld. Jeez,
for fuck's sake, what is it with you guys? A fucking mind meld? You're obsessed with them. It's like, I suggest we try a mind meld. No, is that your only fucking suggestion?
Yeah,
Christ.
The Vulcan death grip is kind of bullshit too, because it's just, you know, I understand that like you could cripple somebody if you have like intricate knowledge on pressure points and stuff like that, but I don't know, like maybe a, like a proper karate chop or like a drop kick or something would have been better for Vulcans.
Honestly, like no one has ever got, no captain has ever gone, oh my God, this man's gone completely crazy. Does anyone know a Vulcan so we could do a mind melt? It's like,
or a death grip on him to incapacitate him. Yeah.
Well, they're this like crew of like Vulcan ninjas, like, you know, going around death gripping people. It's mental anyway. Maybe there is. Maybe I missed that episode.
Maybe.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
So anyway, what else have you guys been doing other than watching Star Trek this week?
Well, listen, I actually thought about this before I came out here to record this with you guys. I do actually have some exciting news from my household.
Oh.
Yeah, you ready for this?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We got a new kitchen sink tap.
Oh, you son of a bitch.
It's fucking nice, too. It's one of those ones that goes up really high, so you can actually get the kettle, like, right in the sink under it, and there's still place for lots of dirty plates and stuff to pile up in there. Mm-hmm. And the water flow is exceptional.
God, I thought you really built that up, Sips. I thought you were going to say...
It feels like I'm in a holiday home.
We won the lottery. It's almost extravagant.
No, yeah. No, nothing that exciting. But, I mean, we've had this old kitchen sink tap that was leaking for quite some time. And I'm pretty lazy. I never get around to stuff.
Right.
And then finally, I phoned up the plumber. And I was like, are you guys able to come here and fit a kitchen sink tap? And he's like, yeah, of course. So I went and bought one, and then he came down and fit it in like 20 minutes, and then when he left I was like, fuck, I probably could have done that, but I was glad that he did it instead.
Emasculated but happy with the new tap.
Yeah, because the thing is, the difference was he left and there wasn't a big mess or a big puddle of water or anything. Like, he put all the stuff back under the sink and whatever. If it was me, there would be big mess, there'd be stuff everywhere. And people would be mad at me.
I wouldn't even know where to fucking start with that. Like,
yeah, so I'm glad that I just...
Did he have to turn the water off? Yeah. I have no idea.
You don't know if you have to turn the water off to change the tap.
What do you unscrew? No,
there's like pipes that have their own little knobs on them, like under your sink, and you just turn those off.
If you don't, like on the tap, like if you have... I've actually fitted taps and changed washers, and I can do all that stuff because you can look up how to do it, and it's really not... Like anything involving plumbing, like you've got to have the right pressure and the right kind of pipe, and it's got to be the right width, and you've got to have the right, you know, bends in and all that. That's super skilled stuff, obviously.
Yeah.
But talking about changing a tap, come on now. It's not difficult. You turn
off
the water.
Well, in my defense, he did come to look at the boiler primarily, and then it was just like, oh, do you mind fitting this while you're here? And he was like, yeah, okay. So, you know, it was like two birds with one stone sort of thing.
Right.
But... You know, if I was really sort of gung-ho about fitting a kitchen sink tap, I probably could do it.
Can you say gung-ho anymore?
Why can't you say gung-ho?
Why couldn't you say gung-ho? What's wrong
with
that?
Sounds racist.
Gung-ho?
Against who?
Against, like...
The gungs of Manchuria. Great offense.
Against hoes.
Well, I don't know. It's one of those things that we're not allowed to say certain things. We're not allowed to call
it's
it
a
Chinese whispers.
It's nice.
It's an anglicized pronunciation of, and forgive me here, Chinese speakers, gong ho, which is also sometimes anglicized as kung ho. I'm trying my best here.
I'm pretty sure that there was a G.I. Joe figure named Gung Ho.
Let's have a look.
There's that as well.
I'm pretty sure there was, actually. I think, yeah. He was the dude, he looked a bit like Blaine from Predator. With the flat hat, big burly guy, massive gun.
Yeah, yeah.
No, it's cool.
Real American heroes.
Yo, Joe!
God,
did
I
you ever watch
G.I.
that?
Joe when I was a kid. I mean, this was the 80s. First appearance, 1983. Yeah. That was right in my wheelhouse right there.
Yeah, I was 3 at the time, but I grew into them. I had a whole bunch of G.I. Joes by the tender age of 6.
Wait,
I'm sure.
Dude, I'm about to ruin your appreciation for Gung Ho. Are you ready?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Gung Ho's real name is Etienne R. Lafitte.
Oh, that doesn't ruin it. It's kind of like Thierry Henry.
Yeah,
you
but
know?
No guy
I'm,
called
I'm like,
Etienne
cool.
R. Lafitte is going to be like, je suis Gung Ho, let's go, and jump over the top. He's going to be like, maybe we should go and have a cup of coffee first.
Hey, les garçons, je suis Gung Ho.
Allez, Gung Ho, oui, avec moi.
No, he lost lost his French accent and he became more like the guy who cuts himself shaving in The Predator.
Wait, he's Cajun. He's Cajun.
Oh, I see.
The good kind of Etienne Arlefie.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
Etienne Arlefie.
From New Orleans.
Eventually moved to New Orleans, earning a reputation as a bare-knuckle brawler and knife fighter. Joined the Marines at age 18 and was the distinguished honor graduate from Marine Corps Recruit Depot, Paris Island. He was attended Airborne School, Recondo School, Marine Ordnance School, Administration School at Camp Johnson, and is a qualified expert in all NATO infantry small arms, most Warsaw Pact infantry weapons, and the XM-76 grenade launcher.
I love the G.I. Joe lore. It's amazing. It's so amazing, and it's not appreciated enough. Like, nobody looks back into this stuff. Like, Sergeant Slaughter, remember him?
Mm.
And then there was Jinx. There was a woman named Jinx, and Lady Jane, and there was Duke, and who else?
Which was that
guy?
There's the guy who was the American football player. And I think they called him like the fridge or something.
Really?
And they made a G.I. Joe of him. Yeah.
I've got G.I. Joe online exclusive 7-packs. Here's the assault on Cobra Island squad.
Snake Eyes? Remember Snake Eyes,
yeah,
the ninja guy?
He was
blind? He was fucking cool,
Outback,
man. Holy shit.
Recondo, Zap.
Recondo.
Chuckles. Hit and Run.
Chuckles. I remember Chuckles. I remember Chuckles. He had like camo pants and then he had like a beige dress shirt.
Yeah.
And he had blonde hair.
And then there's,
am I right?
Hit and Run. You are right. And there's a guy just called Wetsuit.
Wetsuit.
And then here's the
They almost sound like Transformers. I think the guys who made G.I. Joe made Transformers as well. Or Americanized
Transformers. Was Mattel? Yeah. I could be wrong.
It's all so similar, though, like the names and like the. I'm pretty sure the voice actors and the cartoons were like pretty much the same. Like the guy who did Starscream, I think, did Cobra Commander and stuff. Like,
was there a blind guy?
I'm pretty sure there was a lot of crossover there.
Oh, they were Hasbro. They were also Hasbro. So Transformers was also Hasbro. Holy shit.
Oh, man.
But the Cobra team was Dr. Mindbender. And then it just gets
Destro.
A bit shit. Range Viper. Alley Viper. There's a guy called Lampreys. A guy called Bat. Night Creeper. And Strato Viper.
What was the guy? They had Destro and then they had that dude. It was like Man-at-Arms or something. He had like metal arms and an eye patch.
He had a guy called Man-at-Arms. Who was like his buddy, right? But I don't
maybe
know.
Maybe that's who I'm thinking of.
Man
but there was definitely,
definitely
a there's a G.I. Joe guy. He had like a cobra shaped helmet, I guess, like if that makes sense to you. But he had an eye patch and a mustache.
Yeah.
And then he had like two black metal arms. But I can't remember his name now. He was.
You're just thinking of like a guy out of Mortal Kombat or whatever.
No, all the G.I. Joe guys did sort of look like Mortal Kombat guys.
Yeah.
Like, I think there was a lot of inspiration there.
This was way before.
There was a G.I. Joe. There was a boxer guy in G.I. Joe as well.
You had Snake Eyes, who was the blind ninja guy. Storm Shadow, who was the white ninja guy. Like, his costume was white. Cobra Commander, who was, of course, the blue Cobra guy. Destro.
Yeah.
Who was the guy with the metal head, I think?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
and
he had the silver head. Yeah.
Scarlet, Duke, Flint, Stalker,
Flint.
Hawk,
yeah.
Lady J. Roadblock. You can't forget
Roadblock. Yeah, Roadblock. And then they had Sewer Rat or whatever. Remember that guy?
Tunnel Rat. I think
how
so.
He had a really
going?
Huge backpack, but he was good at, crawling through sewers
toys.
And stuff.
You know what? One of the figures I had when I was a kid was Shipwreck, who was a sailor, and he had a little parrot on his shoulder, and the toy came with a little parrot. That
So I remember
cool.
that. I had the base. I had the offshore oil platform looking base.
Oh, wow.
It had like the risers and stuff. That was pretty cool. It had like a helicopter landing pad.
Shit, there's
and
the
then
door.
God damn it! One year, my grandma bought me this huge helicopter.
Don't leave me with Zips. He's just gone to get the door and you're telling me about G.I. Joe. G.I.
What?
Joe completely
missed
me.
For you guys, it was Action Man, right? You guys had like the Barbie-sized
maybe the reason why
Action
I'm
Man.
A puny, like, millennial... like pussy is because I never had G.I. Joe.
No,
right?
It's probably right. So
I never got given it.
G.I. Joe's
my parents
were,
maybe thought it was too violent or like
the way
know.
That the toys were made too. If you had a small screwdriver, like you know, the ones that you use like to
apologies.
Like on your computer, you know, when you build a computer, you have those small little precision screwdriver
yeah,
things.
Yeah.
So if you had one of those handy, you could unscrew a G.I. Joe from their back and take them apart. Mm. And they had like little elastics and stuff to like hold them in place. So you could like swap and change them around. So you could put like Tunnel Rat's pants on like Chuckles' body instead and stuff if you wanted to. But people who did that were like kind of weird. And you didn't
you wanted them
to just be pure. You didn't want to have like any weird.
Pure, out of the box Joe. None of this no mussing.
None of this messing around with the G.I. Joes. But yeah, we had tons of G.I. Joes when I was smaller, and we used to play with them out in our front yard, right? So yeah. We'd dig trenches in lawn. I got in trouble for it, and we'd have big wars with them and stuff, and it was really fun.
God, it was great.
And then every week, like every Sunday or whatever, everybody would be like super upset because one or two of them would be left in the yard by accident, and then they'd get run over by the lawnmower and just like cut into a million pieces. So it just looked like it was like a horror show out there. There'd just be like little limbs and stuff laying all over the freshly cut grass. But then, you know, you just get some more.
The Cobra lawnmower. Off you go. Merciless.
Yeah. They came with like little weapons and everything too. Did. Fuck, they were such good toys. They were
good.
Awesome.
They were good. The weird thing about kids' shows now compared to kids' shows when I was a kid is that now the toys seem to come along. If the show is successful, there'll be some toys to go with it. But it felt like back then it was literally an advert for toys. Like the He-Man show, when you watch it, they were like, oh look, it's a new friend, and you know, this guy is now available in stores. They didn't say it in the show, but they may as well have done it. I mean all of these things, all of these new characters they introduce and all of these awful plots they come, it's all just to shift more toys. The thing is, as a kid, it sucks that they advertise directly to kids like that, but I fucking loved it. And it's not like it was my money. All my parents had to do was say, no, we're not fucking buying you more G.I. Joe toys. You can have a book. And that's up to the... You know what I mean? The parents just have to say, no, you can't have the Cobra Island playset. You're going to have a book and a jumper.
Well, we had to wait for like Christmas.
Yeah, exactly.
For big stuff. Like we barely got anything throughout the year except for like your birthday or Christmas, and then you'd get a couple of like, you know, big things to tide you over until the next birthday or Christmas sort of thing, and that was it. But and then as you got older, it was games instead, right? Like I remember I used to get all of the like the NES and the Super Nintendo Final Fantasy games. Like I'd always get one at Christmas somehow.
How old were you when you stopped playing with toys? Because I can remember the occasion very distinctly.
I mean, I never fully stopped though, right? Because I had a brother. Well, I have a brother still, but he was 6 years younger. As he was coming up, he was getting into like Ghostbusters and Ninja Turtles, and he had all these toys. And I was kind of getting to the age where I was like, no, fuck, you know, toys. Like, I don't want, don't buy me any toys, but I'll gladly sit here and like play with them with my brother, sort of thing. Because they were still kind of cool.
That's kind of sweet, actually, honestly. That's
Literally, I can imagine like you two, like sitting there as like babies. I think I imagine Peter like this little bald baby, and I imagine sitting as this little balding baby, right? I can't help it. You guys are sat there like on your ass, you know, with your legs out in front of you, and you just look at the G.I. Joe, and you just said, "Oh, I'm too old. I'm done for this.
I'm done with this shit."
Just like sadly, like miserably,
light
like,
up a cigarette. I think I'm done with toys. Oh man.
And your first birthday really disappointed. I thought I asked for cigarettes and a bottle of scotch.
I remember it was like, Jesus. I remember it was around the time Ren and Stimpy came out. I think that's when I was like sort of getting out of toys.
Right.
Ren and Stimpy came out and people would come over to my house after school and we would watch Ren and Stimpy.
That show was so good, man. That was
It was, and people would fucking raid my cupboards and eat like all of our snacks and stuff. My mom would always get really mad, and that's when I knew that I was like transitioning into just like a fucking dope of a teenager instead of just being a kid who stayed home and played with toys or whatever. That's like the hallmark, isn't it, when random people start turning up at your house after school and hanging out there until like, you know, whenever somebody comes to pick them up or they'll get in trouble, sort of thing. That's the transition period, isn't it? That's when you're just like no longer a kid. You're just like some asshole who's, you know, always in your parents' house and they're just like, they can't wait for you to move out, sort of thing.
Yeah, so, maybe.
Yeah.
I had some best friends like when I was growing up. One of them, my friend William, who was absolutely my best friend when I was growing up, and we were colossal nerds together, right? And he was a kind of an unusual character. I've always had friends who were kind of a bit weird, or maybe people didn't really get them, sort of thing. And it never bothered me that people had strange personal foibles. His were multiple. Like, for instance, if we were going into town together, and I'd say, "Hey, let's take the bus," as I'm getting on the bus, he'd say, "I'm going to walk." So I would ride into town on the bus and meet him in town after he'd walked in. And I'd be like, "Okay." And we'd go to the shops or whatever, and he'd be like, "I'm going to go home." And he'd just sort of go. But it wasn't that he was being unpleasant. He just had no social skills whatsoever. And he was kind of strange like that. But it never bothered me. Like, we played all kinds of nerdy games, played all this loads of Spectrum games. We played board games for hours and hours and hours, like really complicated ones, like Starfleet Battles and shit like that. That's like a fucking textbook of rules. And I was at his house one time, and he had loads of toy soldiers. I had loads of toy soldiers. And we used to play in his garden quite a lot with him, because his mum had dug quite deep flower beds. And around the flower beds, it was like an obvious trench. And so you could set up your troops in that trench without having to dig. It was great. And the pond was like the main central feature. You know, we'd have to battle around the pond and everything like that. And I remember one time I went around there with my soldiers, and out of nowhere, he just goes like, "I don't want to play with toy soldiers anymore." I was like, "Oh," like I was crushed. I loved playing with the toy soldiers, because I realized subsequently that was me wanting to play like tabletop board gaming and miniatures and stuff like that. But I was still there with the soldiers, had my little bag of soldiers that I brought over, and he was like, "Nah, I'm done." I was like,
he just reaches his arm out of scene, and then, you know, he pulls back some like 14-year-old girl.
No, he didn't have a girl. That was the thing. If it had been a girl, it would have been like, "No, I'm into girls now." I was like, "Oh yeah, well, all right, that's cool. That's cooler than soldiers." He was just literally, he didn't want to do it. He just wanted to do something else. I was like, "Oh, okay." I was crushed.
He puts his arm out of scene and pulls in a 14-year-old boy. "I'm done with soldiers now."
Oh man. I think we were probably about 10 or 11. And I was too old for toy soldiers, but it was subsequent to that I got into like tabletop gaming and stuff, and he instantly did as well. Like we used to play like Warhammer 40K and stuff like that.
Yeah,
but it was when I was 11 at school that some of the sixth formers were playing that game, and they were like, "Oh, do you want to play?" And I was like, "Yeah, fuck yeah." Like, they were really cool, and
nice.
It was great. Fucking love it. I wish I had the space for a massive, I always wanted to have like one of those massive tables that people have, and you know, you see a picture of it on the internet, it's like taking over their whole basement. It's just a huge tabletop gaming thing.
Yeah.
With a castle.
That comes like later in life though, right? Like people become like massive enthusiasts about it or whatever, like as they're a bit older and they have more disposable income.
Yeah, you got
and then
the moolah.
They build these massive nerd lairs in their basement or whatever.
Yeah, it used to be a thing with train sets, right? It used to always be the dad's sort of refuge in the basement where he'd put together his model train set. But I guess that'll be replaced by you having a, you know, G.I. Joe battleground.
No. Like, well, no, it's just computer now. Like, you just get a big computer with all your games on it. And then, well, that's me anyway. Just like sit out here in my dad garage and just fucking play.
I remember playing tabletop board games and stuff with my friends. Just because I remember we had like a big dining table in my dining room, stroke living room, which I had in my, because we lived in a sort of a big bungalow with a big bit weird sort of place. Anyway, it was really nice to just sort of hang out there when it was like hot in summer with my friend and playing Warhammer, and we were both like pretty young, you know, we didn't really follow the rules or know the rules particularly, but we argued over the rules all the time. We were just like yelling at the top of our voices at each other, like arguing away, and it was a wonderful time. I loved it. Yeah.
You liked arguing about Warhammer?
Gossips, give us your dad basement dreams.
Well, I'm in it right now. I'm living it right now. Like, this is what I do sort of
living
thing.
Living the dream.
Which is pretty nice. But I remember come back to toys and getting out of toys or whatever. I remember getting out of lots of toys kind of around like 11 or 12 or whatever. And then we sort of all collectively decided that it was no longer cool to play with toys or whatever. We had to do other stuff. But one thing that we still kept doing like really like for years afterwards, up until we were like maybe even like 16, we still played with Lego a lot. Like we'd make these huge, huge bases out of Lego. And then we'd make like a ball out of Lego that we'd throw at each other's bases. So you had like a huge base and you had to have like a power core that was like hidden somewhere. So Jesus. If they knocked out your power core, you were dead. Wow. Right? And we, cause we, all of us had tons of Lego. So we, like at one point, I think we just combined all of our Lego together, just had like thousands and thousands of pieces of Lego. And we just sit there like it always happened if there was just like nothing going on, right? Like if nobody had money or we just like weren't doing something or whatever, we would just sit in our friend's basement and we just play fucking Lego forever. It was crazy. It was really fun too, but
sounds
it was
amazing.
Like it was really hush wow. hush too. Like we couldn't go to school and be like, "Yeah, we played Lego for like 30 hours this weekend," sort of thing. Like we just it was just this thing where you'd see your friend on Monday at school or whatever, and you'd just give him that knowing look. But like never talked about
like
it again.
Secret shame buried yeah. under the ground.
Yeah, yeah. Had, like, it was really fucking fun though. It was awesome, and that's where like we started a lot of this fucking weird. You know, chit-chatting when you're not really paying attention and you're just like, you know, making shit out of Lego or whatever and stuff. We would just do that for hours.
You hung out with
really
all the
fun.
Mole men. They were into
yeah,
it.
We were just
the
like,
were down
yeah,
there,
feeding our girls and just playing
feeding
Lego
the
and
Lego.
Stuff. Yeah, it was good times.
Do you ever wonder man. If, I mean, I don't know if kids still play games that way where they all just play like that kind of really inventive stuff, or if they just go around and play FIFA. And I think it is kind of a shame that as much as I love games, I'd hate to think like a lot of the games I still remember them. They're really founding memories that I've made of the games that I played and the toys that I play with. Like sometimes I go to my mum's house and she's still got all my old toys, bless her. So I kind of go through these boxes and pull out something I haven't seen for 30 years. And I instantly recognize it. And I remember the games I play with it and the things that we did. And I kind
You've got to remember, P-Flex, when we were kids, we were bored out of our fucking minds.
We were. That's
right?
It.
We were because had nothing you turn like- on the telly and there would be nothing on the telly, right? Because you'd have, it'd be like daytime. You wouldn't be able to, there was no Netflix, yeah. nothing to watch, no YouTube, no screens. You didn't have a mobile phone. You had no games. You had shit. You had literally fuck all. You had
I remember literally playing outside for like 12 hours a day yeah. when I was small. Like it would it be in the summer, it would get dark at like 10 o'clock at night or whatever. And you would just be out like right until it got dark. And then your parents would be like, okay, everybody, time to come in or whatever. But that's like all you did. Because like Lewis said, it was just fucking nothing to do.
Yeah,
like we'd play,
yeah.
we'd play
you,
baseball
you
in the
video
street.
Games because you got the, you know, you weren't allowed to get them all. You only got them like once a week yeah. if you rented it from the local video shop or whatever, if you were lucky. Yeah. And then, you know, the rest of the time it was like, yeah, just fucking entertain yourself. And so you just
pretty much
kind of, I mean, I think we were, times were different, P-Flex. Got to remember that.
Oh, I know. Very they different. Were different. What I'm saying is I want the people, the young people of today to suffer as I did, because otherwise how is that fair?
I don't
it's
think
not,
it's,
yeah, it's not fair. They're just so fucking plugged in nowadays that, you know,
I think
they got
our imagination
everything.
Was a false symptom of mass boredom, though. It's a little bit like being put in solitary confinement in prison, right? Like yeah. your mind will start making shit up and creating all these amazing like worlds and stuff.
You know, insane. What's amazing is when my kids say, "How long until we go to so and so?" and I'll say, "Oh, it's like a week." They go, "A week?" And it seems to them like the longest time. And I think you're right. Going back to the whole boredom thing, a lot of the time, I mean, they have to go to school. And I fucking hated going to school when you were sitting in a lesson, just sitting there, just waiting. And as I got older, I started to really like watch the clock and be thinking, oh my God, I just want to go home and play. Or I just want to go yeah. out or go on my bike or be running around and doing something without people telling me to sit down and having to learn about volcanoes and stuff. And that, you know, all the kind of stuff you got to do at school, you just got to plod through it. And it's literally so much that you want to do as a kid. You've got all the energy in the world. I mean, my kids just never stop. They'll say they're tired and then they'll see something they want to do. And then they'll do that for like 4 hours, just bounding around, leaping off stuff. And I think yeah. you said you were tired 2 seconds ago. What you meant was you're bored. You're just fucking bored to tears. How desperately sad.
Yeah. It's the way it is, though. Like, it's just the way that kids are. Like, they just think that they have no concept of time, really.
Yeah.
Kids, You know, like we went on vacation last year. We took my son to Disneyland. This is like months before we even left. I was like, hey, guess what? We're going to go to Disneyland. He's like, now? Like, no, like we're not going fucking now. Like, it's going to happen in like 6 months, but we're going. And he's like, oh, okay. Like, you know, he just like he has no, unless it's like literally splashing him in the face at that second, he's just not interested. Like, it's just,
yeah,
it's hilarious, but yeah.
It's really realistic, I guess. It's really living in the moment. It's a good way to live, really. It's kind of,
you think so?
You know, yeah, it's like,
because if it was up to my kids, they'd have the same thing for dinner pretty much every night, and they'd have
ice cream.
A huge,
it
dessert.
Would be literally ice cream,
yeah, it would
for
be
dinner.
Ice cream every night. And then, what would you, what do you want to do today? Just play all day. If the world was run like that, Lewis. Nothing would ever get done if we didn't plan
that's
ahead.
How Greece and Italy work, right?
Hey, politics. It's a politics joke.
Gosh.
Oh my god.
If you're from Greece or from Italy, I just want you to know that I don't share the same opinions about you as Lewis. So don't.
Yeah.
If I see you in like an alley or something, or like a back alley,
is that what
like
you think? Greek and Italian people hang out.
Something.
They all hang out in an alley.
Yeah, pretty
hey, señor.
Hey, señor. Yeah, something
well,
like that. Anyway,
that's obviously not Greek or Italian.
No disrespect meant. No disrespect meant. Okay, that's all I'm saying. But yeah, I remember when we were kids. I remember a big problem for us when we were kids because we had to play outside a lot. Was the streetlights weren't bright enough to be able to catch a baseball or a football when it was thrown at you. So it was like, it got to be a bit of a problem, like, you know, sort of as the sun was setting, it's like all of a sudden it's like, hey, hang on, you know, this guy got a home run, but actually it wouldn't have really been a home run 3 hours ago when the sun was out and I could actually see what the fuck was going on sort of thing. And that led to like a lot of arguments and stuff too.
What you try and bring in a rule that says like like as the light goes down, the distance you have to hit the ball.
It was like a technicality, right? Like, you know, this guy who never hits home runs would just like, you know, hit his first home run, and it was because of that. And then everybody would be sitting in the back grumbling away, like, no, fuck this guy. Fucking, that's not a real home run.
That's, you know what? Typical. That's the weird thing. Kids fucking love making up rules. Like, they love everything has to be really quite strict, I find, when they play. Like, I you know, when my daughters are playing games, the rules are so fucking overbearing. At times, I'm like, Jesus Christ, girls, give it a break with the rules. Like, you're not allowed to touch this, and then this is my one, and then you have to come around the side, and then you're going to do this, and you can only have two of these and four of these, and we've got to split them up, even then you can't come over my side, and here's my boundary. It's like, shut the fuck up and play.
My son does this thing where he's like, all right, we're going to be characters from this show. I'm going to be, like, the main character. Like, he'll always pick the main character, or he'll pick the bad guy, like the main bad guy, like for whatever reason. Those are like his go-tos. And then he gives me the option. He's like, what character would you like to be? And then I'll be like, I just want to be, you know, some fucking obscure nerd that, like, you know, nobody cares about or something.
Chuckles.
You know, I'll be Chuckles. He's like, no, Dad, no, you can't be Chuckles. You have to be like the right-hand man or you know, somebody that he can, like, you know, sort of like control like the game with, sort of thing. Like, and every time he asks me, I always try to pick like the most obscure asshole character, like, just to see what his reaction will be. It's really funny.
It's this kind of moment of confusion, isn't it, when he tries to figure out who that is. And he just says, no, he can't be, because I don't think he half knows who that is.
Yeah,
or he's trying to remember it in his head.
Yeah,
or you've just made it up.
It's really, really good. It's funny. It's funny, like playing like games like that with kids and stuff, because their reactions are so genuine. They're like so funny too, because they don't have a filter, right?
Yeah.
Like, they're just like, whatever they're thinking, it'll just come out, sort of thing. So it's like, it's really excellent.
God.
Oh my goodness. So let's move on to what games you guys have been playing this week. What have you guys been playing that's good?
Oh man, I picked up Fallout 4 again. I started playing it. I created a new character and I started from the start because I thought, last time I played it for like 50 hours. I didn't do any quests. I just went around, I dicked around and stuff. So this time I thought, you know what? I'm going to do the main quest line, follow it through. And I'm like, getting through it, and I've been enjoying it, actually. Like, the main quest is pretty cool. Like, I like the whole thing with, like, the Institute and everything, and just finding out what's going on. I haven't, like, read anything about it, so I don't, there's not that many spoilers out there for me about it or whatever, so I'm enjoying it. And there's a whole bunch of new DLC for it too. Like, you can make like these factories now in your settlements, wow, like contraptions, like automate like conveyor belts and stuff.
Jeez.
So I'm going to check that out. And there's some other shit. And there's a couple of like sort of quest based DLCs. And then I think next month there's a DLC coming out where you can manage your own vault. So like you get a vault, and then you can like recruit people to live in it, and you can build them exercise machines and shit like that. Mm. So that looks pretty fun too.
Exercise machines.
I like all that kind of shit. So yeah, I've been playing that. And Overwatch competitive play came out, I guess, like yesterday
have
or the
you,
day
have
before.
Have you played the competitive stuff?
Yeah, yeah. I did all my placement matches, wow, and I'm rank or rating 51.
Wow.
So yeah,
congrats.
I'm the best. Thanks,
man. What
does
that mean?
I don't, it's on a scale of 1 to 100, so
not
really
bad.
Average, I
slap
guess.
Slap bang in the middle.
No, I guarantee you that's not average. Like, if you think about Dota, you'd think that, like, for instance, there are some players who are 9K MMR, so you'd think that being 4,500 to 5,000 MMR would be, like, the average, but it's not. It's always, like, a pyramid. Like, most people that play these games fucking suck. And genuinely, when you play with them, you realize...
I mean, I would normally put myself in that camp, so...
Right,
like,
but
I bet
you're not. Like, a lot of people play games and are so, so bad at them. They put thousands of hours in, but they're even worse than us, which is amazing to me. But it does happen. So I wouldn't... I don't
competitive
think
play is
too
cool,
bad.
Though. Like, it changes the rules of some of the maps and stuff. So, like... Oh, yeah. You know, like the capture point, like, leading into payload maps sort of thing. Like in the first round, let's say you're defending, right? And let's say you're attacking, okay? And you the other team defend so well that you can't even capture the first point
right?
All you have to do when you're defending is make sure that happens as well. But for the attacker, all they need to do to win the whole game is capture that first point because you were unable to capture it yourself.
Because I was thinking it's fucking stupid when there's no benefit to me. Like you need like four overtimes to capture the point or whatever. Like it needs to be, it's like saying, well, I won 4-0 in the first leg and you won 1-0 in the second leg, so it's a tie. It's like, no, it's not a tie. I should be winning by 4-1. Like, you know, that's good. I'm glad they brought that in.
It's pretty cool. And then they've introduced this new, almost like in-game currency now. Like every time you play a competitive game or win a competitive game, you get a competitive point, which you can save up a ton of and buy like cosmetic shit with. So like Soldier 76 has like a... It costs like 300 competitive points, but it's like a golden gun sort of thing.
He is my favorite hero. I love Soldier.
He's pretty cool, yeah.
I like him.
So that just shit like that, but it's definitely sort of heading in the right direction. It's interesting anyway. It's pretty fun. So I've been playing that a bit, and then Prison Architect as well. Still playing that. It's fun. Enjoy it.
Yeah, I booted that up. I played a little bit of Prison Architect. I think it's good, isn't it? It's a lot. I mean, when you compare it to RimWorld, it feels like RimWorld is because I played RimWorld first.
Right.
Prison Architect feels like such a slick, much more polished, well done version of the engine. Playing RimWorld, it's kind of a bit rough around the edges.
It is a bit,
kind of
a little bit
janky.
You can tell RimWorld is still like a very Well, it's pretty polished, you know, all things considered, but it is still a work in progress.
Yeah,
you can tell that they're still going to add a lot of stuff to it.
Yeah, the polish is like just 100 times better on Prison Architect. Yeah, I enjoyed it. I picked, because it's Steam Summer Sale on, and I picked up a bunch of things to try them out, and I ended up refunding like 3 or 4 things because they didn't sort of work properly. First of all, I bought Watch Dogs, because I'd never played that, and I wanted to play it, and then I couldn't get it to run, so I was like,
what,
fuck
the new
shit.
Watch Dogs? Watch Dogs 2?
Yeah. No, not New Watch Dogs. I don't think the new Watch Dogs is out yet. Is
I don't even know when it's coming out.
No, like, I don't think it's out. But I think it's out fairly soon. I wanted to play the first one before so I might have to rebuy it and try it again. But God, I'm annoyed about that. And then I bought like a series of kind of RPG type. I just fancied like a dungeon crawly roguelike RPG sort of experience for a change. And so I bought a couple of them on Steam and on the Steam sale. And I either couldn't get into them or they were a little bit too grindy, I'm happy. I spent a weekend like trying out a bunch of different games, and you know, I had a good time about it. So, yeah,
I feel like recently I've been playing games a lot more naturally, because like you tend to sort of not do that when you record for YouTube and stuff. Sometimes you're like playing games that you might not necessarily be playing a lot of in your spare time or whatever. Right. But I feel like I've got a couple of games now that I'm playing regularly and looking forward to picking back up and playing, sort of thing. And I think like having two or three games that you sort of like, you know, jump around. You need like one really grindy game that's like sort of like your overarching game, sort of thing.
Yeah.
So like for me right now, that's like Overwatch, something that, you know, the progression's very slow and you just sort of like gather these E points or whatever as you play, and it's like pretty fun, bursty fun or whatever. And then like Fallout and Prison Architect are my more like long brewing games where there's like a story developing and stuff like that. So it's like, yeah, I like those as well. I like to just like chop and change in between them. And then when I'm done with one of them, I'm sure something else will just replace them. But it's a nice place to be in.
Simon came in this week and was chatting to me after we recorded Whale Lords about how basically he still plays WoW a lot.
Yeah.
Do you ever play WoW, P-Flex?
No, but every time I play Hearthstone or anything involving Battle.net, I log in and Simon is in World of Warcraft like all the time. And everyone in my stream goes, holy shit, Simon still plays WoW. Like yes. He plays it a lot, judging from his Battle.net stuff. So
he sits there poops around, levels up alts, does quests. He likes the world. He likes chatting to people in guild chat. He likes doing the fishing. That's kind of just his like casual thing to do.
Yeah.
And I think he gets a lot of joy out of it. I feel like I've managed to shake that bad habit. So I never thought WoW was like a hugely positive experience in my life. I mean, I've got to thank it in a way for, you know, the way it sort of allowed me to meet up with you guys and stuff. So, I mean, I do feel like I owe WoW, but at the same time, I feel like I'm glad to not be a crack addict anymore.
Right.
Yeah. In a way. Because
WoW's a tricky one. I never know what to do when I get back into it. It's such a huge game.
Yeah,
it's so overwhelming.
Much.
I log into my whatever my character was that I last played, open up their bags, they're full, and I'm like, oh fuck, I don't like it's too much. I just have to log out.
Yeah,
I just don't know what to do.
It's just
like
there's no
organization. I'm not like in the flow with it whatsoever, sort of thing. So like more often than not, like if I come back to play WoW, I usually just level the character from scratch again, just to sort of get back into it or whatever.
It's hard to dip in and out of a game if it's that big. Like I play a lot of games like for instance, if I'm playing a game of Civ 5, say, I very rarely go back and load a game even the next day, unless it's like been an amazing game. I very rarely finish them. I'll play it up to a point and I'll be like, okay, oh, I'm done with this now. I've played Civ for 5 hours and I'll stop. And then I'll never come back and load that up like a week later, ever. It's like while the experience is going on and you're doing it day to day, it feels like it's fresh in my mind. But the moment I step away, I have no idea what's going on. It's gone. And that kind of makes me realize that a lot of the time when I'm playing games, it's just stuff that's happening and I'm responding to it, but there's not really anything being embedded in my head. Whereas when I play, like, for instance, when I play a multiplayer game, because I'm playing it with other people, the experience embeds itself in my head more because it's like a shared one. And because we're talking and I remember the conversations and stuff like that. So like when I play Dota, there are lots of games of Dota that I still remember really well, or plays that happen in the game. Whereas with World of Warcraft, I don't really remember much other than I seem to remember things like the music I was listening to while I was playing. Like there were certain albums I was listening to at the time, and every time I hear a song or I hear that album, I'll think, oh shit, I remember I was playing World of Warcraft when I heard this for the first time. It's like that, that kind
it's
of
like a memory trigger.
Yeah, that,
it's like
that
a certain
kind of stuff.
Smell that does stuff. There are certain elements in life that do that, like the trick that jog your memory from a specific time and place, you know, when you were doing something.
But the game itself, it's just so big. There's so much to it.
It is. It's like a lifestyle game, though, isn't it? It's like it's for a lot of people, it's probably the only game that they play.
Yeah.
And, you know, some people might only play it for an hour a day and some people might play it for 24 hours a day or whatever. But like it's so big and it when you leave it and you try to come back to it, it's really impossible. I guess that's why expansions are quite good, though, because you're sort of forced to restart because there's all this new content. You have to go through it. You have to do all this stuff. And then if you're still really into the game or you want to keep playing, you know, you're just there sort of thing, and it's fine. I'm going to play Legion when it comes out. I'm actually looking forward to it. I don't know how long I'm going to play it for, but it's weird that a game could be so old and, you know, been around for such a long time, and I'm still fairly excited to play it from time to time sort of thing. Yeah. Like, I always somehow gravitate back towards it, even if it's just for 2 or 3 weeks or whatever. Like, there's definitely things about it that I miss that, like, I don't think will ever come back, you know, like having a big guild sort of thing and a really like active guild chat and, you know, raiding regularly with people and stuff. Like, I don't think I'd ever... I don't know. I don't know if the game is like that so much anymore. I guess it is for some people, but I don't know if it is for us.
Like, we've changed. The game's changed. Like, it is different. The way we experience and enjoy games is different, I think, too. Like, you know, I don't know. I have some really good memories in WoW, you know, because obviously everyone has good memories of, like, playing games as a kid. You know, I remember I used to work summer holidays in an off license, and I would get to, like, take home... Basically, guys... This is to all the listeners out there. If you are interested in something, okay, get a job doing that and you'll end up with free that, right? So when I worked in an off license, I got a lot of free booze, okay? Because it went out a day or whatever, it was getting chucked away. I was like, oh, I'll take it. So I ended up taking like a crate of Archers home because it was all going out of date. And I literally spent like a whole summer just in the heat, you know, basically my pants, playing WoW with the window open, like, but beautiful sunny day out there, but I'm playing WoW with drinking Archers every night till I got fucking wasted. Waking up the next day, you know, going to work, sunny day, come home, play WoW and drink Archers. It was a wonderful, happy time of my life. Just a syrupy, peachy, sugary, WoW flavored mess. Man, nice. I don't know how I climbed out of that hole, but I did. Eventually. I mean, there were some wonderful fucking times playing video games, I remember, like, from my past. Well, some really good experiences.
I think it was EVE Online was the time that I enjoyed a sort of MMO the most. Like, I did enjoy WoW, but I definitely wasn't in a guild that I liked. Like, they were just convenient because they were about the same level as I was and they were raiding the same things as I was. Like, I can't even remember what they were called. They were mainly Danish guys. And they were nice enough, but they took it quite seriously, even though they weren't very good at it. And they weren't much sort of fun, you know what I mean? They weren't like, there was very little social chatting and stuff. It was just, we kind of methodically helped each other with quests and it was kind of functional.
Business.
Yeah, it was quite businessy. So I didn't get much of a social side from it. Whereas when I played EVE for like 4 years, it was entirely just a social thing. And we just had a laugh. Like, we'd go on these ops where we'd fly around and we'd all get drunk. And one time we did a musical op where we flew around and one guy was playing the trombone, one guy was playing the guitar, and I was singing, and we did Stairway to Heaven whilst we were flying into battle, right? We were doing like this little over-the-internet weird acoustic trombone version of Stairway to Heaven. It was the weirdest thing, but it was so cool. Like, I remember thinking how funny it was. And that was great. Like, that was honestly, that side of it has always been more fun to me than the MMO grind. Like, I don't want to just sit on my own. But I did when I played WoW. I'd sit there on my own and do it. And I remember thinking, man, this is fucking boring. But I was kind of just zoned out doing it. It was just like a thing you did.
It was weird, though. It was just kind of chill, wasn't it? Yeah. You just like have a movie on or just have some music on or whatever. And you just do this really repetitive thing over and over and over.
Yeah.
Sort of half pay attention to what was going on. But you kind of knew that like when you were done grinding like that, you would... You know, it would open up the game so that you could do other stuff. Like, you know, I would level up and grind through it and stuff like that, knowing that, you know, oh, it'd be cool to get into a raid group, do some raids and do that kind of stuff, or, you know, maybe do some PvP or something like that. And it was always like, it always led up to something and always took a little while, but it was all right. Like, I didn't mind it so much.
But I feel like with the raiding, once we started, because I did the same thing. Like, I ground up to level 60 and it took forever because I fucked it up. And I went back and did it with a different character and it was fine. And, you know, you go and get this bit of gear and you'd be like, oh, I need to get this so I can do that. And it was like, fine. And you'd get your guildmates to help you out. Like, I'm sure there was a quest for mages where you had to do one instance to get something. I can't even remember what it was. It was like, so either something to change your hex from a sheep to a turtle or something. I can't even remember it, honestly. And I'm sure that
there was
just a few things that you do just to sort of, you know, minor things for your character. And that was fine. But then once we started doing the raiding and you realized that with 40 people and not enough loot for 40 people, you were going to be coming back and doing this exact same instance constantly. And it was hours, and it was no fun because it was so stressful and tense because we were rubbish, so we wiped constantly. And I was just at that point, I realized that everything I'd been grinding for was actually not much fun. And all right, it opened it up for me, but holy shit, I quit. Once we did Molten Core a few times and I didn't get anything, and I realized how much time I had to dedicate to it. I was like, fuck me, this is... And there's always someone who has to leave. One of the healers like, oh, go.
Oh, no, yeah. Like, oh, and it was such a chore for people too, right? Like, after you'd run it a couple of times and everybody knew the fights and stuff, it was... Everybody was there. They were just like, well, fuck, we gotta do this again. Like, I gotta put myself through this 7 hours of Molten Core again.
I'm not gonna get anything.
Yeah. It's a funny mentality, but like, I don't know. You're younger then too, right? Like, I didn't at the time, like, I played WoW, I paid a subscription and everything, and you know, I wasn't buying games like every day or anything back then. It was just like, okay, I'm gonna play this, and then when I'm really sick of it, I'll buy something else, sort of thing. But like, it's a bit different now. I get games given to me for free a lot now too, so like, I don't appreciate them as much. Like, I'll play a game that I haven't paid for and I'll be like, whatever, like, I don't even care about it, sort of thing.
I think you don't value stuff when it's for free though. I think that was the thing that we had when we were younger, right? If you paid 50 quid for a game or whatever, even if it was a shit game, you would fucking work to get to extract every last quid from out of that.
I
think the reason I kind of like games where it's the same game, but it's like a random start, like, each time. So every time you restart, you don't feel like you've gone back to square one. You feel like this is just the game. This is what it is. Like, there are lots of games I return to like that. Game Dev Tycoon is one that for some reason I always come back to. I love that. Yeah, I love that game. I don't know why, I find it very relaxing.
Oh, it feels so repetitive.
I've done it as well. I've played it so many times and come back to it and started it so many times. Yeah.
I just really love it.
It's something really weird about it, yeah.
I love the little balls going blah, 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 like that. It's just it's just satisfying to me. Whereas
Go ahead.
I was just going to say something like Football Manager is the same thing. I come back and I'll manage a different team and it'll be the same, you know, starts in 2015. It's the same thing, but so much different stuff happens because of the nature of the game. It's different every time. I like that. I like the same with Civ, you know, different start, different, the game's going to play out completely differently. That's one of the downsides, I think, to Hearts of Iron, which is a game I know we're all playing a lot, is that there is no random map start. And I think until the mods and stuff and the DLC comes in, like, we were talking about having a version where nobody's in a faction and nobody's allied and there's no, you know, you'd literally build up diplomacy rather than be like a fixed, Japan always goes to war with Russia, or Japan and America can never be friends. You know, you could have a version where everybody's just chill at the start and maybe started in 1930 or whatever, and then you build up your own politics and see what the AI does. Like, maybe Japan and Russia become best buddies and go and conquer America, you know, that kind of thing. I would like to see that rather than the fixed, just, you know, can you change history again? It's like,
I don't know. I like the fix though. There's lots of, you know, there's lots of things that you can do with it though, you know, like there's lots of countries that you can turn into something out of nothing and really change the course of the war, like, no matter where you are. Like, I feel like there is a limit to it, but it would take you a while to reach limit sort of thing.
I'm just thinking longer term, it would be fun to have some other game like that. Because I do find myself coming back to games, like with RimWorld, for instance, where you don't know what's going to happen. There's lots of random events and stuff. Or Prison Architect, you can build a different prison. You'll have different prisoners and different problems every time. Whereas I feel like...
Well, and Prison Architect, you can try different things too.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like, you can really... You could almost make like a factory if you really wanted to, like, where they could come out directly into like a shower thing and, you know, not even give them a way to leave the prison ever, sort of thing. Yeah. You know, like, there's all sorts of different shit that you can try in that game, and it sort of caters very well to that, like, you know, inventiveness.
Yeah,
I guess
it's really cool. That's the thing about WoW, is if you want to level a character, there is pretty much an optimal way to do everything in that game. Like, it's more about, I think the reason people love the new content is because it isn't locked in that this is what you do and this is the order you do it in and this is the best thing for this and this is the best thing for that. And I think with WoW, a lot of people are attracted to it because it's fixed and you know what you have to do. And they just like, it's like people that like doing puzzles or coloring in books, you know, it's like, you know what you have to do. It's all laid out before you. You just got to complete the task. And some people really take a lot of satisfaction from that. Whereas I like the randomness, like of stuff like RimWorld and stuff like that, where you have to conquer a different, very changing set of circumstances as the game goes on.
Yeah, it's definitely different and cool too. Pyrian's comments about the faction thing in Hearts of Iron 4 is off the back of the fact that we've recorded a sort of game, me, Pyrian, and Lewis of Hearts of Iron 4, which went okay. I guess you'll see. It'll be on Team Double Dragon soon-ish, yeah, I guess. Yeah. The whole thing is done now. And we're planning on doing another one, which we might start tomorrow. I'm not sure. We'll have to see.
Yeah.
But it was fun. I enjoyed it anyway. I think you guys enjoyed it too.
It was a blast. Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
It's a fun game. Yeah. And it's definitely fun multiplayer too. Yeah, I didn't think it would be so much fun.
Yeah, same here. I didn't think it would be as good, but it was fantastic. Yeah,
it was really fun. I wanted to say something else as well about WoW. Sorry, just before I forget. The funny thing about WoW and the funny thing about the expansion model, like every time an expansion comes around, I think a lot of the hype for people who have played the game, you know, since the start or have played it for a very long time and have been around for a couple of expansions at least, I think there's always that hope that you're going to get things back that you've lost along the way in terms of WoW, right?
Yeah.
It's a fresh expansion. Everybody is going to get into it. Everybody is going to hopefully really enjoy it and stick around. And then you're going to get your big guild back with regular this and that and do fun shit or whatever. And it never really does. It never works out. But maybe Legion will be the one. Maybe Legion will be the one to bring them all back. Who knows?
I don't know. It's good. It's a good to have like a... I always enjoy these moments when we all pitch in, when everyone gets involved and it's like, oh, hey, everyone's playing this game. And like, you know, you bump into fucking Xylus out there or, you know, you say in guild chat, hey, does anyone want to do this? And it's like, you know, you just get together a bunch of random people like, you know, like some random people from the office are playing and one of Hat Films or, you know, someone you know from somewhere, you know, someone you went to school with and suddenly you're in a little group and you're chatting away. I don't know. It's like it's really nice when everyone's playing the same game and we get together and have like these, it's like kind of, everyone's excited, everyone's into it, everyone's exploring this new world together and sharing it and not necessarily competing with each other, but I think that's always been an element of WoW. It's always been an element of, you know, you put the time in, you put the effort in, and then you can show off to people, you know, other
that's
people.
That's it. Especially when they used to have all that shit. Like, I remember doing like the Paladin Epic Mount quest, which was like a real ball ache back in the day because it cost like a lot of gold, which was not as abundant as it is nowadays and stuff.
No,
and remember
like,
they had the
know,
Hunter
really
one as well,
to,
where you had to do those like stupid kiting.
A lot of these were a real fiddle and they took you, you know, you needed a couple of mates to take out their time to do it with you. Or,
you
needed to like have a lot of resources, which weren't easy to get, you know, it wasn't as easy as, you know, back in the day before you could just literally buy gold in the game, which you can now because you just buy a token or whatever and sell it for like 90,000 gold or whatever. So you can actually buy gold in the game legit. You know, before gold
you can pay for your subscription with it now too.
Yeah, I mean, you can play the game and pay for, you can basically make the game free to play if you play it enough,
of
thing, which is a nice mechanic in a way, but I don't know. I mean, it's the Eve ISK mechanic as well, isn't it? That you can pay for your subscription with kind of enough.
Is it ISK or ISK? I always just said ISK.
I think everyone says ISK pretty much.
I can't remember. And so, you know, I don't know. Like, I feel that it's the social passion is what's exciting for me. You know, I think that's why people like it. And I think that, you know, when people do start dropping off that radar, it's like, well, who am I going to play with now? I think that's why some other MMOs don't hold the same allure, right? It's because none of your friends are playing them.
Yeah.
If you got a bunch of you together saying, hey, we're going to all play this MMO now, you know, there's going to be a bunch of us doing it, then, and everyone sort of felt like other people were playing it.
Yeah.
It's a little bit like Rust. You know, everyone got on board that bandwagon and then it sort of slowly faded out and, you know, into a couple of people still doing it. But nothing anywhere near what it was before.
That's it. Everybody was into it, like, solid for like a week or two.
And I think our attention span is short.
Yeah.
But that's due to us just getting older, I think, and having more variety, though. You know, I haven't got anything bad to say about it, really. It's good. I'd rather have new expansions than not. I don't think there's a way to return to the old days. And honestly, if we get a week of cool social activity and like fun and, you know, memorable times out of it, then fucking cool. You know, I'll remember though from Draenor that what happened was you basically were so salty that you couldn't play on the EU servers. You were so mad that you fucking literally made an account on the US servers.
Yeah.
And played there instead. Yeah.
I could actually log in and play, so it made sense.
So we couldn't
at the time.
Play together, which was like super annoying. But you didn't really care, did you? But we gave up about the same time as well, I think.
Well, yeah, we played for about 2 weeks, didn't we? We just sort of got to max level, did a couple of dungeons or whatever, and then Draenor was exciting and fun at the time, but I don't know. I think as far as expansions go, I don't think it's going to be remembered as a great one.
There is something weird about like that new thing, right? Where everyone's exploring for the first time and you're like the first there, and it's almost like not exactly a race, but everyone wants to play on launch day. It's funny how the something being new has such a shiny sort of attachment to it that makes it somehow... Everyone sort of thinks it's somehow going to be really way better. I think you can go back to old games like Skyrim or Fallout 4 for the first time or whatever, and they're fucking incredible games. Or even older games like, you know, Banjo-Kazooie or, you know, Ocarina of Time. You can go back to really old games and they're still super fucking good today.
Banjo-Kazooie?
I don't even think I ever played Banjo-Kazooie, to be honest.
Man, what a great game.
I don't think I'd play that now.
You wouldn't play that today.
No.
No.
Was that originally a PlayStation game?
I think so, yeah. I remember playing it at the time.
I mean, these games are super old. Like, they're like 20 years old, literally. Those games. And
PlayStation was weird.
I guess what I'm trying to say is that we are often blinded by the allure of newness in our culture. That everyone thinks that because something is new, it will be for some reason... better and sometimes, you know, that's not necessarily the case.
I guess not.
Wow, what a boring chat.
No, it's not.
Sorry.
It's not boring at all. This is
segment of the podcast where we get serious about games, because games are a huge part of what we do and how our lives and they have been forever.
And also we know that most of the people watching this play games, like I think sometimes maybe we don't joke around about games as much. I don't know why, because we all do when we're playing them, but when we're talking about them, I think it's actually something we know quite a lot about. Like, all of us have played a shitload of games, been playing games for years, have seen how they changed, have, you know, we've been a part of a lot of scenes and stuff with, you know.
Yeah,
so I think it's actually something we know stuff about. And I
here's the thing. Right, I think that you can have a lot of fun doing anything with friends, right? If you've just got a bunch of you around, you've got even a fucking shit game like Monopoly, you know, it can still be a good laugh if you've got the right people around the table. I guess we play games for a living, and that's kind of a weird thing. But one of the things that I've been doing lately very much is playing the games that I really enjoy. You know, like you said, playing Hearts of Iron, playing Civ, playing certain sort of crappy walking simulators with Duncan, playing like these Minecraft mod packs. I've been playing a lot of the games that I enjoy. What I haven't been doing really is the other sort of, some of the other things I would like to do. So I'd like to play some Warhammer, or not Warhammer so much, but I think one of the things we've looked at is the Judge Dredd miniatures game.
Oh yeah.
And so it's like a kind of gang-based thing. You recruit like some ape men or some fatties or whatever. You make a little gang and you kind of fight with other people's gangs. You know, you have to paint your models and stuff. I want to find a way to make videos out of that, which I'm really not sure how to do, but I really want to do it. I want to do another D&D campaign.
Oh,
I think
I'd love
that,
to
that's
do that.
Really fun. I love that. And if you want to be in it, I'd love to have you in that.
Well, yeah, would it have to be something that you did live?
Yeah, it's like in Bristol.
Yeah, we'd have to do it. We'd have to do it in person. That's the difficulty. Yeah.
I mean, if I came down like in the summer, my kids are away for 2 weeks. And there's
whenever you're thinking of going down, let me know. And
yeah, we
I'll
could
go
do
down
it. That
too,
would be
and then
awesome. Because they're away for like 2 weeks in the summer. And the only thing is, the weekend I need to be back in Bournemouth for just for that one night, and then I've got another week free. So I could even just come down for a bit. We could record a shitload of stuff, like do a D&D campaign and do all kinds of stuff, and then it's like I could be down for a whole week and do it. I'd fucking love that.
Yeah, I think I'd really enjoy doing something like that. I think that it has to be something that you're interested in, though, right? Because I think that with the D&D campaign, I think it has to be, you have to give a shit about, like...
Are you saying like, that I'm someone who fails to give a shit a lot of the time?
No, the last one we did was the zombie one, right?
And yeah, then,
I think the next one we should do should be a post-nuclear apocalypse, like kind of like a Fallout sort of thing, you know, coming out of a vault and then, you know, just like having an adventure in a wasteland leading up to something. That'd be awesome.
Here's the thing with D&D, right? I think it's a little bit like a superhero movie, if you're not careful, where you can't die. Do you know what I mean? Because it would ruin it. It's like, you know, you can't watch a Batman film anywhere expecting, oh, is Batman going to die in this bit? Is Superman going to die in this bit? You know that there's another film that he can't die, that he's going to win, that he's going to save the day. And it's so predictable that I can't stand it. Unless you're 7 years old, I can't get much pleasure out of watching these things and these stories. Because I read so many books, I read so much better story, that when it comes to these films or shows where I'm not invested at all. I'm like, well, you know, so what? He got out of it in an interesting way, but, you know, I knew he was going to get out of it somehow. So, you know, it's not, I'm not fucking watching this like as a detective novel. How does he get out of this one? I'm watching it as a, I don't know, I have a problem. And so with D&D, I have the same problem, okay, in that I have a problem where these people do these long campaigns where their characters almost are invulnerable. And I have that because the GM, one of the GM's jobs is to, like, you know, balance it so it's challenging for them. Right. So they feel like they could die, but they're never actually going to. And I know that it's supposed to happen, but I don't like the D&D system a lot. Like, I've got a lot of problems with the D&D system. I have a problem with combat. It's really long. It's too dice rolly. People don't know what they're doing. I think that when you get a group together, okay, who know what they're doing, it makes a really good video. The Civ is a good example of this, okay? Because we all play Civ 5 together, and nowadays we all kind of know what we're doing, and as a result, it's quite an enjoyable experience for everyone, right? I think that if we were playing Civ 5 for the first time, or whenever we just play a brand new game that we're all still learning,
right,
it suffers a bit from that. And I think the problem with D&D is that when we do D&D and Yogg's Quest, sometimes if people, we have to keep the rules fairly simple, because otherwise every time we do something, it's like, can I do this? Yeah. Okay, I'm going to do this. Okay. Well, you need to roll a dex to roll. Okay, what's that? Well, look at your character sheet. Okay, what's my dex? 16. Okay, what does that mean? You need you to roll a d20 with minus 4. Right, d20
with
minus 4.
I mean, that pretty much in a nutshell is our whole thing, period. So
it's incredibly much of a ball ache, okay? Whereas what you need to have is people who know the system well enough to say, hey, shit, okay, I'm going to shoot this guy, roll the dice. The way I think there's things you can do is, like, you can have a time limit on people's turn. They can only take, like, 30 seconds or whatever. But also, if people know the system, then they're going to fucking be, like, totally... They're playing the game themselves, and the GM is just sort of there on the sidelines. But one of the things we did with the Zombie Yogg's Quest, right, was that... Well, basically, I think in order to get invested in a D&D campaign, you need to almost be excited yourself to make a character, to understand what the world is you're going into, to kind of have come with some prep. And I think a lot of the time, some of the people we've had on D&D, we've said, hey, can you come on D&D? And they're like, yeah, sure. I'm not going to prepare anything. I want to come at this. I don't, you know, I'll be okay to RP once I'm there, but give me a character. It's like, well, I kind of don't want that. I kind of want you to talk to me about how you want, what your character is. I want you to write a little bit of backstory. I want you to have a think,
okay,
a bit of prep. And I think sometimes, like, I think that makes it better, right? Because then you're more invested, you're more interested. I think High Rollers are really, I don't know if you've watched any of High Rollers. It's the Sunday D&D stream, which Mark Humes runs as a GM. And that's very classic D&D. And it's great because all the characters kind of love their, all the guys love their characters, and you could tell and they're interested. But I feel like there shouldn't be such a safety net underneath them.
What you're looking for is more of a Game of Thronesy. Anyone could die in a horrible way at any time, but there's some overriding goal that we hope they're going to get to. And if we lose some people along the way, we can replace them with other people. Like maybe a D&D campaign that doesn't pull punches. And if the DM rolls a crit and, hey, your wizard just got shot in the face by an arrow, you'll have to have another character. So maybe you could even have people bring multiple characters with them that they can sort of go to if theirs gets killed. So they want to see if they can get there with the character that they, you know, like before they have to go back to another one, maybe. Something like, but with a bit more peril involved than the old,
well, me and
you miraculously dodged the dragon breath again.
Yeah, well, exactly. This is like, I don't know. I feel like
that's just all my characters basically because I don't know how to play. So I also
feel like the problem with D&D is everyone's got so much health and healing and revives and recoveries and all this bullshit that, you know, if someone gets stabbed through, you know, by or bitten by a bear, they're like, yeah, you took one wound, you've got 17 left and a shield and a health and a renew and a phoenix down and all this bollocks. It's like, fuck off. Like, some of the systems are different, okay, where they are a lot more brutal and serious. There's loads and loads of D&D systems out there. You know, me and Tom have played quite a few of them. And Yogg's Quest was this one where we kind of, the idea we had was this Left 4 Dead safe room mechanic, right? So if your character was stupid or unlucky or naive or got left behind or sacrificed, you decided to sacrifice yourself or do something heroic, sometimes, you know, that, because in the zombie world, it kind of, it felt like you could meet up with new people along the way, and they would be at a disadvantage because they wouldn't have had the experience that your guy did. Maybe they wouldn't have had the levels. Maybe they wouldn't have had the story as well. And the experience is like, oh yeah, okay, you did survive the bear attack. So, you know, now you're super wounded and stuff, but and gross, but, you know, that maybe that opens up other options as a result. You know, maybe people will take pity with you and let you in, or, you know, whatever. Like, there's, it feels like having a character to start with, but then having that grow and then being sad when they die, but also excited to pick up a new RP role quickly.
Some kind of a post-apocalyptic thing, but that maybe doesn't just have fucking zombies. Because it's...
No, don't worry, we won't do zombies again, and we'll never do zombies again. I mean, when we do Yogg's Quest, it'll be a different setting.
Zombies pretty played out. I think even post-apocalypse is pretty played out, but I the thing I like about post-apocalypse is that if all you have is a wasteland of something that once was like, you know, a thriving, normal place or whatever, there's lots of different stories you could have there, sort of thing.
Well,
and you're not constantly running away from hordes of zombies necessarily. Yeah. You know,
but what about there was a game system called Traveller, which they then made into like a sort of later version of Traveller, which is really good. But Mark will know about it. But I think if we were the crew of a ship, that would be kind of cool. Not in a Star Trek sense, but in the Traveller universe is kind of, there's multiple major powers, and you're just like a trader. Or like a mercenaries, or, you know, you just go around doing jobs. So it's like being elite, like in Elite.
We did that. We did a similar one to that. The one before, was it the one before last year?
I remember you guys were dressed up as space people. Yeah,
the space one. But yeah, I know.
It was a cool idea.
Yeah, if it had, you know, maybe a bit more.
You need another person. Bingo! You bump into an escape pod, or you land on a planet, and there's a nobleman there fleeing persecution or something. You know, you could chuck it all together. Like we did the Star Wars one, and I felt like if a character had been killed, we could find another character and it would fit in with the story. But it's the challenge of role playing games is, you know, you want to play. You've built up a character to level 10. You don't want to just be given a level 10 character because it doesn't. You don't feel like you've grown that person to that level.
No, yeah,
it is tricky.
I think the difficulty that I have is that when I want to make videos on D&D and things like this, I want to have it be 20-minute videos, right? I don't want to have it be a four-hour live stream every week, you know, because I think that's what the D&D pace is pretty slow because of the nature of the dice rolling and the mechanics and all that stuff. But I think as you get more adept at it, more comfortable with it, you get better. And I think that With practice comes a bit of expertise. I guess I don't want to stifle the kind of energy and creativity, though.
Rulesiness.
Yeah, and I don't know. It's a balance, and we're working on figuring out what the best way to do it is. And there's a reason we haven't done a Yogg's Quest for a while. It's because we're sort of trying to figure out how we want
a good system for it. Yeah,
but it is a fucking amazing experience to like just take.
It is
on,
very fun to do.
Take on like a skin of someone else and play an exciting and dynamic and good story with actual real fear. Like if you actually are attached to this character and you actually are feared of them, I think that a lot of the time people in D&D just are reckless. They run around, they shoot everyone. They don't have any. They're like a psychopath.
Yeah.
They don't have any feelings that there's going to be consequences because it doesn't. You know. I think that's what I want to try and avoid in future a little bit. because I don't think you need to be a jester in these games. You don't need to just kind of just be this just chaotic psychopath.
All right. Okay, point taken. Jeez.
You can be like a Hmong man or a fatty or whatever you want.
A feeder. Yeah. I'm going to be a feeder next time. It's going to be great.
I can be the chubby if you want to be my feeder.
Any day. Is that what you're going to Bournemouth for? One night sold out tonight. Pyrion Flanks on stage.
Oh my KFC.
Pyrion eats Bournemouth. Going to Bournemouth to eat at everything. Just bring me your food. A queue of people offering me foods. KFC, master. A hot dog with relish. Oh, yeah. Feed me.
I need somebody to file down my bed sores. Come on.
Oh,
who's
my
up?
God.
And on that bombshell, let's get to the questions. We got any questions?
All right. Let's get to the questions.
I've got one longish question. It's not really a long question itself, but the answers might be long. And then followed up by a really short one. All right.
Yep.
So first one is from a guy named Andrew Markham. He asks, what type of prison inmate would each of you be? So when I read that, I instantly thought of Andy Dufresne because he's like, you know, the role model prisoner that everybody thinks that they would be like, right? You know,
yeah.
Go in there, carve out chess pieces, you know, try to convince people that you were innocent and then escape out of a shit pipe.
He was convicted of the murder of his wife. Wrongly convicted of the murder of his wife.
Yeah, he's wrongly convicted. Even though because she was having an affair, right? And he killed her or
her, but he went there to, he had a gun, he had something to drink, he went to confront them, and the lawyer says, like,
and she was dead.
What were you hoping to do? He goes, I don't know, just scare them maybe. And then he changed his mind, drove home and went to sleep, and wakes up the next morning, of course, his wife and her lover were killed, and then he's wrongly convicted of it and sent down. The thing about Andy Dufresne is that he doesn't change when he's in prison. Like, prison to him is not a transformative experience. He's the same when he goes in and he's the same when he comes out. He never lets it break him. And I think that's the message of the movie, is that you go into prison, and if you're Andy Dufresne about it, you never change. You let on that you've been changed, but you never change, because he always had this hope. Because remember, they said to him at the start, one of the things that Red says to him is, don't trust hope in here, Andy. Dangerous thing to do. Don't trust, you know. And it's like, he just goes, oh, geez, Red, you know, maybe I could tunnel out of here, buddy. Wink, wink, if you know what I mean. I don't know what you're talking about, Andy. Tunnel? What? And so, in the, you know, he's always had that hope, because he's always been working towards getting free. So I think that that's the thing about it. The perfect prisoner. I would be the prisoner who would go in there and kill themselves, because I would be so miserable. It is my greatest fear in life, being locked up, especially wrongfully. The idea of being sent down, no hope, that's it, I'm stuck forever. I would probably be one of the guys that hangs himself with a sock in his cell. I couldn't handle it. I could not handle it.
I mean, I like to think that I would be the guy who went in there who had like a barcode tattoo, like mysteriously on his forehead, and nobody knew who he was. And then I was just, you know, controlled the prison and through fear, and nobody would fuck with me, sort of thing. But I think it's probably pretty likely that I would either end up killing myself or I would just be so fucking traumatized by the whole thing that I just wouldn't be the same person at all.
Yeah.
I'd just be like a slobbering mess
awful.
In the corner, sort of thing. Yeah,
like,
it'd be pretty
bad.
I think
the idea of being treated like less than a human being, especially if you were in there and you weren't given time to reflect on your deeds, because you had done no deeds. You just shouldn't have even been there. And there are people who've spent like 20, 30 years in prison for something they didn't do. And I think that is the greatest torture that you can inflict on someone, is locking them up, taking away their life. Like, that's the thing. Every 5 years that goes by, I'm thinking, what, all those things I've missed, everything I could have done.
Like, I think we are very Americanized in this country and this culture by what we see on TV. We have this idea that going to prison will be like an American prison, okay? I don't think it'll be like, I think it'll be like porridge. Do you ever watch porridge?
Yeah, yeah.
It's very British, right?
Yeah, it's very British,
you know, kind of run down, slightly, you know, the
really
prison is like some
looking,
old sort of damp castle with like cobblestone walls, you know, like a fucking iron gate, and like, you know, a big old fucking key, and the warden and the jailers are all in like smart uniforms with hats on, you know. And I don't know, I feel like a British prison is a little bit different too. But I mean, I'm sure it'd still be overcrowded and gross, and there'll be like But I guess everyone will have English accents in there. You know, all the other criminals from other countries will all be extradited. Yeah. You know, it'll be a bunch of fucking Brits in there. And, you know, I'm sure they're all gonna like watch the football. And you know, I think it's not gonna be what we think. You know, what we think about it from American TV. Not that I know. You know, or want to find out either. I think I'd probably be a fucking piece of meat in there. God, they'd just snap me. But you know, sexuality is pretty fluid. I could probably get used to it. I could get into like the mole man group and the like chubby groups and yeah, like kind of figure out, carve out my niche. Yeah. And eventually the mole men will tunnel their out to dig the hole out of there.
The thing is though, is prison is fucking hardcore, man. Like the thing is, if you're going to go to prison, okay, I think that if you're doing something and you're not in prison, but it's something that could get you in prison, make sure that whatever you're doing hooks you up big time, gives you lots of connects inside prison, because inevitably when you go to prison, you're gonna networking. Be fucked if you don't. Yeah, you like it, like Omar in The Wire, when he goes in, he's got two fucking old school homies who like, you know, watch his back, give him the phone book so that he doesn't get stabbed.
God, that's
and
such
stuff.
A great scene when they come in and he's like preparing really to fight and they're like, Butchie sent us. And he's like, oh shit. And they pack him up with the phone books. They give him a little plastic knife that he cuts that guy's balls off with.
Fucking duct tape that shit to him and everything. And it's just like, oh man, that's what you want. That's what you want to get. You want to go into jail and you want to have something like that waiting for you. Like guys that you know are going to have your back. If you're going into jail for something really dumb and you don't have any connects in jail and stuff, you're fucked basically. You are literally going to get fucked. And probably just have a miserable fucking time as well.
You know what?
You're just going to turn into somebody's fucking meat.
Well, you say that. Like,
it's going to be awful.
But I was at university with a guy. He when we got there, the day that we moved in, so I was like 19 and he was 40 and he'd come that day from prison. Like he'd been released that day and he'd managed to get released so he could go to university and sort of turn his life around and stuff. And he'd been inside for armed robbery. He'd robbed the post office. He'd robbed multiple post offices before they finally caught him. And we were always asking him, like, what was it like in prison? He said, I mean, this would have been in the 80s and the 90s. And he said, it wasn't really what you think at all. It was just mainly fighting, like a lot of people fighting because they're bored and they hate the guards and they're miserable and the food is bad and it's a depressing environment. And it's kind of hopeless and it's a lot of fighting. And so he fought constantly. And he said, if you're not prepared to fight all the time, you're just going to get the shit kicked out of you. You're like none of the rape stuff. Like he said, he hardly saw any of that at all. And to his knowledge, like it didn't happen apart from, he said, one guy. But the thing is, once you're known as being that kind of person who's like raping other inmates, unless you're part of some kind of gang that all do it, you're not cool with the rest of the prisoners because they don't want that kind of thing happening for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
So it's not something that happens as widely as people make out. I think it's obviously a scary thing. And the idea of it is what puts people off prison in a lot of ways, I think. But he said the main thing was he just fought constantly. And he was hard as fuck. Like he would fight the guards all the time just for something to do. And they'd beat the shit out of him and he'd fight them back. And that was it. Like it's just rough. It's really fucking rough. And I am a complete softie. Like the idea of going to prison,
I'm a total
fight.
Pussy.
And they do things like jugging. I read a book called A Life Inside. And one of the things they do is like when they're making their tea, they'll get a pot of boiling water and just pour that jug of boiling water over someone if they're like pissed off with them. But it,
oh my God.
But it could be something as simple as you sat in the wrong seat. Like if there's a, you know, when you watch TV, everybody's got their agreed seats, but they don't just go up and say, oh, I'm sorry, that's my seat. Oh, I'm sorry, I'll move. They just go and jug you because that way the message has been sent. If you go up and say, excuse me, that's my seat, and they say, fuck off, you've then got to fight them there and then.
You got to jug them
back.
Cut
out the middleman.
You got to
jug them.
Counter
jug. You just go, bam, jugged. That's my
jug
fucking
two.
Seat.
Jug harder.
Yeah, exactly.
I jugged you, fool.
Get jugged.
I'm having trouble carrying this 16-gallon jug of boiling water, but I'm going to jug you, motherfucker.
I'm going to jug the fuck out of you.
Yeah, we joke about it, but, you know, one day when we're all in jail, because let's face it, we've all done shit. That we're not at liberty to speak about on here, you know.
This
we're not going to
be
laughing.
Be used as evidence.
We're not going to be laughing. Let's put it that
Mr.
way,
Mr. Lovett. So when you said you'd done shit, what was that actually referring to?
We would like to present evidence that Mr. Lovett did indeed jug his lawyer. Therefore, we motion he remain in prison for the rest of his able life. Please,
this is a second degree jugging offense.
We got a jugger.
We got a jugger.
We got reports of a jugger.
411 jugging name. In progress.
You could be like Superman's arch nemesis.
Bring raincoats. Repeat, bring raincoats.
Oh my god.
We got a jugging in Cellbuck 2. We got a jugging going on.
So,
please send
recap,
in the dogs.
Lewis would be fluid with his sexuality.
Yep.
I would be crying a lot, and Pyrion would kill himself.
What a fucking horrible
question. I'm jugging people. That's it. They're like, oh, hi, work for the prison. I'm like, jugs, bitch! Just jugging people.
I really enjoyed watching Orange is the New Black. I don't know how realistic that is, but I enjoyed watching
unrealistic,
it.
I think. But it's a good show. I like it. But
it's a good show, really, but it's probably not super realistic. You know what I would love to do? I would love to somehow be close with the guards where I could like make a scenario where I was walking down the entire cell block in the middle of the night whistling like Omar used to do, like in the streets sort of thing, and then everybody be like, oh shit, the jugger's coming, and then I would just pick someone, the jugger's coming, motherfuckers, just jug someone randomly. Like, that would be fucking sweet, but I would never be that inmate.
It's like it's like a jug like running along the bars, and like everyone like chucks their cigarettes ding, out ding, into ding, it. Ding, ding.
They can just hear a distant kettle boiling somewhere.
You just hear like a couple of little splishes and splashes.
He's boiling a kettle. He's gonna jug someone.
Shit, yeah, that'd be fucking great.
How are we laughing about people getting covered in a jug of boiling water? Like, unbelievable. What scumbags. Next.
Listen. Our last question before we wrap up is from Jonathan DeRidder, and he says, when are you guys going to do a Hearts of Iron game, and with who? And we can say to you right now, Jonathan DeRidder, we've done one, the three of us, and it'll be on Team Double Dragon at some point soon, hopefully.
It might be out already. We'll find out.
And we're planning on doing another one as well. So if that one isn't enough for you, Jonathan DeRidder, there's a whammy coming at some point.
Yeah, but I might try and get other people involved, or do it for like the Civ channel, something like that. Because I think it'd be fun to get a slightly different game to the first one we did. Maybe a competitive one actually.
Stellaris is on the cards somehow as well too, at some point possibly. So that'd be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Eventually, maybe.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, and stay
strong, folks.
Frosty and
fight
stuff.
Fight the power.
Peace. Fuck yourselves and bye.